bells will be ringing, the glad, glad news. Oh, what a Christmas can have the blues. My baby's gone, I have no friend to wish me greeting once again. Christmas carol by candlelight. Please come home for Christmas. Please come home for Christmas. If not for Christmas, by New Year's night. Friends and relations, send salutations. True as the stars shine above, it's Christmas time, my dear, the time of year to be with the one you love. Did want you tell me you never were wrong. Christmas and New Year home. There'll be no more sorrow, no grief and pain. Cause I'll be happy, happy once again.
I'd like to do now a song for you that's fitting for the season that we're having now, and I hope you enjoy it. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, folks dressed up like Eskimos, everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe helps to make the seasons bright. Yeah. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know Santa Claus is on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies in his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. So I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Yeah. Although it's been said many times, many ways. Merry Christmas. Everybody.
Okay, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show, and Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, Happy all the good things today, and I'm glad to be back with you and to talk old news and old things, but I won't stress you out. You're going to have enough stress today with the turkey and making sure that it tastes just right and sitting there waiting for the guys that's going to come late, and the guys has got to go home early, and then the other guys that are sitting in there got to make four parties because everybody invited them, and everybody that do the inviting cooks so good, you can't say no. You know how it goes. And let us not forget the less fortunate, or I'm careful to say fortunate now, because look as though we're all being impacted. Today we may be one paycheck away from failure or one illness away from failure and find ourselves homeless or what have you. So let's not forget those that are out there, and I hope that in the coming year for the homeless and those that are impacted by the economics and the capitalism and all those things, let's hope that they are treated better, and let's hope and wish for some legislation, something positive that speak to helping people rather than shuttling them around. And I was looking back at the number of bills and attempts to address the, quote, homeless issue. And it's very dismal, and it doesn't say much about the leaders who are educated and supposedly caring and taking care of us all. So anyway, so much for that. But we were talking in the past about the charter school systems and the school systems and here in the state of Hawaii. And back in October, we broke the story to you about the failure and the threats of the federal government and the race to the top issues. And we talked about those things. And as you see, they're now coming to light. If we were to use that to describe, it's already been light. It's been here. You, the listener, have been privy to that information some 2 months ago. But it's now, quote, coming to light, and people are now addressing. And so what does it really mean? It really means that we're failing our children. And in doing so, we're failing our country, because our children compete and build this country stronger, more wiser, and everlasting, longer lasting. I don't believe anything is everlasting. All empires tend to meet their demise sooner or later because of, we don't know why, but seem they all have a common purpose in life, and is soon to fail because of mismanagement or just arrogance, whatever, we don't know. But I'm going to share with you, there was a hearing, but it wasn't a public hearing that I spoke to you about. And this is Miss Marion Higa. And I want to close out the year to say that while we throw rocks, and I'm always challenging and speaking out about the government is failing. And I want to share with you a positive note on the government, and that is Miss Marion Higa. And I don't believe that you folk out there get the real story and know that, as I'll say, the physical stature of Miss Higa is, if you look at her, she's very small. But the efforts that she take on and commit to, you would be proud. And I'm going to play this hearing. It's about 45 minutes, and I want you to hear her audit, and I want you to see the, so that we don't get you stressed out, I want you to draw your own conclusions that there are some aspects of government that actually work. The problem comes that those that can make the decision, how they treat the issues and how they deal with them. And you'll get from this audit, this report that she's making, you will also see how our legislators and our governor and governors and leaders will allow someone to pull into port with a new idea and not place the constraints or restraints that they would. And you're going to pull your hair out on this. But anyway, enjoy. And I hope that, again, this is the auditor, the state auditor, Miss Marion Heger. And I just wanted to say that it's not all bad. There are Miss Heger's out there working for you. It's just that the people that get the information that she brings to the table, it's what they do not do and what they didn't do to allow it to grow and fester into this problem. So sit back, and I'll talk to you shortly.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and convene this informational briefing. This is a joint convening of the Committees on Education for both the Senate and Mary Shorin Higa, the auditor forward, to do the presentation.
Good afternoon, senators and representatives. It's our pleasure to brief you on our recently issued audit report titled Performance Audit of Hawaii Public Charter School System. At this time, however, before I proceed, a couple of housekeeping details for you. We've brought along hard copies of the report because in some instances it'll be easier to refer to the hard copies instead of what's up on the screen because of the level of detail there. I will also try to use my laser pointer correctly and not beam you in the eyes with any of it when trying to point out some of the detail up there. Also, I would like to start by introducing the members of my staff who worked on this. At one time, we had as many as 8 people doing some of the field work. So I'd like to turn first to my deputy auditor and general counsel, Jan Yamani, Kathleen Requia-Markridge, who was the supervisor in charge. She's also assistant counsel and our HR manager. We wear many hats. Adlin Hayamoto, who was the analyst in charge, Jaina Oshiro, Greg Matsumoto, Steve Wilson, and Dave Chu, who is our full-time editor, had a big hand in crafting the report. And we also had, of course, involvement with many other people on the staff as we proceeded. By way of background, also we have Jan Kai here as our IT person manning the PowerPoint. By way of introduction and background, Hawaii's charter schools, at the time that we did this work, which was for SY school year 09-10, there were 31 schools and 7,800 students, but the charter school movement in Hawaii goes back to 1995, and with the years that I've been auditor and as well as with the office, I was here when the first charter schools were authorized. If you'll turn to the map, next slide there, you'll see the 31 schools there. The preponderant numbers are on Oahu and the Big Island, Hawaii Island. All told, they have revenues of almost $75 million. General funds comprise about $50 million of that. If you look at the green wedge, there's a significant amount of donated funds, and a good portion of this is comprised of Kamehameha money. Kamehameha supports the Hawaiian-based schools to a good extent. Organizationally, that's the total of $73 million for all expenditures in SY 9-10. Organizationally, there are 4 major components of the school system. Of course, at the top is the Board of Education, constitutionally constituted for all of our public education. Beneath the Board of Education is the Charter School Review Panel. The board formulates statewide education policy, adopts performance standards, and these are for all public schools. Until 2007, it was the authorizer of charter schools, and it currently appoints the Charter School Review Panel. The panel itself issues and revokes charters now. It oversees and monitors charter schools under 302B of the statutes, holds charter schools accountable, and appoints the executive director of the administrative office, which is the third entity involved in this organizational structure. That office manages the system, provides support to the schools, as well as supporting the panel. Uh, At the local level, the fourth entities are the local school boards. They govern the charter schools respectively. They're responsible for the financial and academic viability of each school. I think it's important to keep in mind that these are public schools. They must follow certain aspects of state laws, the primary ones being collective bargaining, Chapter 89, and the state ethics code. And many of our findings revolve around noncompliance issues with these two major pieces of legislation. They are exempt from the public procurement code, but they must follow the principles of public accountability because, after all, these are our monies that they are spending. We went into this. This was a self-initiated audit, as we are authorized to do. And after some preliminary work, we decided on two objectives, because if you looked at what the deal was, charter schools were to be given flexibility in exchange for at least performing as well as or better than regular public schools. And we wanted also to determine whether they were in compliance with the applicable laws, rules, regulations, and their own charters. It's important to remember that second part. They are responsible for meeting their obligations under the charters that were approved by initially by the Board of Education, subsequently by the panel. As I said earlier, the premise was that the charter school system would deliver on their promise for equal or better performance. So these were our two focuses, academic performance and public accountability. We decided that in order to know what was really going on, we needed to know what was happening at the schools themselves. But there was no way we could send our staff out to all 31 schools. So we created a matrix of the various characteristics we wanted to cover within the sample that we would pick. And these were the factors that we looked at. Size, there's a huge range in size of schools. Location, statewide, as I showed you earlier on the map. All the islands except Lanai have charter schools. We wanted to have a mix of board-authorized schools as well as panel-authorized schools. We wanted to see how sophisticated they were in their IT systems, whether they were conversion or startups. You may recall that the first schools were conversions, and even more recently, one of the more recent ones is also a conversion school. A number of the schools have a Hawaiian-based curriculum focus, so that had to be part of the mix. AYP stands for Adequate Yearly Progress, and this is a requirement of the national No Child Left Behind. And the states, in exchange for receiving federal funds, are obligated to achieve certain standards under Adequate Yearly Progress. The last bullet there is also federally driven. HQT stands for Highly Qualified Teachers. So we want to see the number of core classes that are taught by non-highly qualified teachers. It's also a federal statute requirement. All right, I will run through a number of the slides today very quickly, even though it looks like we have a voluminous number of slides, just to give you a sense of what we're talking about. So I'll run through these 10 fairly quickly. Education Lab is the former UH Lab School. It's got about 431 students, of course, on the UH Manoa campus. Hakipu'u Learning Center is in Kaneohe. It's a small school of 77 students in FY910. Kalau Kumana is a school up in Makiki. It has 99 students. It may have fewer than that by now. Fourth school was the Hawaii Academy of Arts and Science. This is on Hawaii Island. It's got 432 students. Hawaii Technology Academy is in Waipapu. This is an e-school. 486 at that time, significantly more now. We have more comments on HTA later. Kamaili Academy is in Waianae. 722 students enrolled 2 years ago. Kanu'okaina is in Kealakehe Complex on the island of Hawaii with 215 students. Kanaʻuika Pono Learning Center is in Kapaʻa and has 64 students. Ninth school is Myron Thompson Academy at the time with 550 students, and it's down just down the street here in Kakaʻako. The last school we looked at was West Hawaii Explorations Academy on the Nelha grounds on the west side of the Big Island. And it has 180 students enrolled. To give you a sense, it gives you a range in facilities, a range of types of students. So we try to cover all of the factors in our matrix in our selection. Our overall conclusion, we saw what we call autonomy without accountability in both the factors, both in performance and in principles of wise spending over our money. More specifically, our summary of findings. One, the Charter School Review Panel fails to hold the schools accountable for their academic performance, and the school operations fail to comply with law and principles of public accountability. So I will be spending some time talking about the various parts of each of these findings. Finding one, the review panel fails to hold schools accountable for their performance. The panel has two instruments for its accountability. One is the DIP, the DIP, or the Detailed Implementation Plan. This is crafted at the time of application for charter status. And the second is the annual self-evaluation, also called the ASE. And this is done by the schools per a form and the instructions of the panel. More specifically, the DIP. Part of the application specifies the purpose of the school, sets out what kinds of curriculum and instructional framework we intend to carry out, and serves as the basis for a performance contract by the school. However, the panel's misinterpretation of state law as to its responsibility has then removed accountability from the charter school system. The panel, at the time we talked to members, doubted whether the DIPs themselves could serve as performance contracts. And without that as a basic instrument, then what are you holding the school accountable to? It's our view that the law, however, is clear, that the DIP is, in fact, a performance contract, and when the panel sought the opinion of a deputy AG, that deputy AG agreed that it is, in fact, a performance contract. Consequently, the panel is unsure that if it can require schools to update their DIPs, even though now there is a reauthorization cycle of 6 years, the panel believes that in between that interval, it's not sure that it can ask schools, especially those that were authorized by the Board of Education, the 27 first ones that were authorized by the Board of Education. But again, if you look at 302B in the statutes, the definition of the local school board makes it clear that the charter schools must comply with all directives of the panel, those policies and procedures as well. Charter schools are also subject to the Board of Education's requirements for minimum academic performance for all students. And the instruments there are the Hawaii Content and Performance Standards, Hawaii State Assessment, and all public and charter schools must meet or exceed those standards. And as you've seen in some of the coverage on our report, we did look at some of these statistics. The panel did not know whether the DIPs complied with applicable laws or best practices. It has not routinely assessed the 31 DIPs that it has in its possession, nor does it know if the schools are meeting student performance outcomes. It relies only on the other instrument, the annual self-evaluation. However, when we went to the 10 schools and asked more probing questions as to what the school's understanding of the ASE is, what the terms mean, how do they fill it out, we looked at what each of these is on record, we found that the data in the ASC is not reliable or meaningful. And this view of the self-reporting is shared by NACSA, the National Association for Charter School Authorizers, and the committee's task force, the joint task force, also sought an opinion from NACSA on its work, and I think found that report to be very credible for your purposes as well. We also found that its opinion that relying on self-reporting is not a reliable assessment instrument. We found that the panel doesn't collect, doesn't analyze, doesn't verify data in those annual self-evaluations. Within the ASC, there are sections of information that the schools are asked to provide that the panel could get directly from DOE itself. And in some instances, when we compare that information, even though the schools should have gotten it from DOE, such as enrollment data and some of the test information, even that information was not accurately captured in the ASC, leading us to the conclusion that the ASCs themselves are not reliable instruments for assessment. And in fact, when we were at the schools, one principal admitted that, well, he couldn't get very good guidance as to what a section of the report is asking him to report. So he just put down whatever he could off the top of his head. Now, part of the problem is the feedback that the panel gives to the schools on their ASUs is meaningless. And we have some quotes up there as to what these comments are like. For instance, continue efforts to raise math scores, or continue to increase the number of HQT, or consider overlapping local school board members' terms. To give you an example of what we mean, we pulled down the 10 ASCs and the responses. Part of the problem is there's a committee of the panel, the accountability committee, that's responsible for assessing the ASCs, but it gets participation from other panel members. There are no guidance, there's no consistency in how they are to look at these ASCs. And each person who looks at a school's ASC gets last year's ASC. So if that was done by someone without much guidance and has some of these kinds of broad statements, then no wonder in the following year, if they use that as a guide, you'll find some very broad statements as well. On the other hand, there are some where whoever did the assessment took a closer look and had some more concrete suggestions. But overall, the system is not one that elicits good data and good, meaningful comments from the schools. Mostly because the panel is not giving it, probably not giving it enough attention and doesn't have enough help from the office, and we'll get to that. So when we looked at the 10 schools, 10 of the 10 had no consistency between the data and the supporting documents within the school. So part of our test work was when we went into the schools, we asked them, how do you support this part of the report? How do you support this part of the report? And so in all of their schools, we found no consistency between the data and the supporting documents. In 4 of the 10 schools, the enrollment numbers didn't match up. Now, you would expect this to be the same because DOE has an official count date. Nevertheless, when we asked for supporting data to justify those enrollment counts, they weren't there. Some of the schools had wait lists for entrance, and in 3 of them, the waitlisted numbers didn't match with their supporting documentation. In one school in particular, we found a discrepancy of 28 students between what was in their ASC and the supporting documents. Now, because there is a per pupil allocation based on enrollment, we just did a quick calculation that had the panel and the administrative office used the higher number that the school was McKinney had had, it would have had $161,000 more than it should have been entitled to. So this is a fiscal consequence of material not being defensible. That's just an example. We also found such inconsistencies as misleading reporting of its performance data. One school reported test results for one grade, not for the entire school, but in its ASE made it seem as though those results applied to the entire school. We have that extracted up there. I'm sorry, you can't see this very well. Halau Kumana, in using the Hawaii State assessment, contained, Jan, back up one, please. There, all right. I think you can see there, it says HKM's reading score is 324, higher than the state average and slightly lower than the complex. In this school, Halau Kumana is in the Roosevelt complex. Then the other highlighted yellow is, while HKM is not yet proficient in science and math, the point spread represented in the chart is relatively narrow. Remember, this was representing the entire school's results. We did our own analysis of their test data, and that's shown in the next slide. The lavender bars are Roosevelt Complex Charter School. Halau Kumana is in yellow. The bold line is the No Child Left Behind standard that all schools are expected to meet for these relevant years. So you can see there in reading, for the whole school, in 09 and 10, the school's not doing too badly. It's close to NCLB or just about at NCLB. However, in the next slide, if you look at the math scores, there's a huge difference between the school's performance and the complex's performance, and of course, way below NCLB standards. So this is the kind of misleading information that is presented versus what you see if you did the analysis of the data. What we did was take the standard information, and it's not difficult, well, it's laborious, but it's not hard. But this data is available. It could have been done by the officer of the panel. But having this kind of data then allows the panel or the office to challenge broad statements like the ASC presented. All right. Myron B. Thompson gave us this data, and the yellow portions are the omissions. This data was not made available to us at the time we asked. However, and this was within the ASC, however, the omissions were not noticed by the panel when the ASC was presented to the panel. This was the panel's assessment of the evaluation. And the highlighted one there in the second bullet is detailed analysis of assessment data. There was no such detailed analysis of assessment data. So it's an example of omissions that are not caught when the ASCs are presented. Now, the panel's position is it's not getting support from the office to carry out its functions. It doesn't have resources or time to validate and analyze data the way we did. And it also maintains that the law is ambiguous vis-a-vis the office's responsibility to it. We disagree. 302B, 8B11, says that the panel appoints the executive director, and if you appoint someone, you can hold them accountable to your appointment. There are other details in the law. The office is responsible for managing the system, and that's laid out there. It can assist with collecting and verifying ASE data. We verified the data ourselves. We went to the schools. We asked for the documents. We analyzed them. We interviewed school staff. The panel's reporting is unclear on whether the schools are meeting the minimum academic requirements. So we did it ourselves, as I said, for all 10 schools. And again, if you turn to your hard copy, you will see these kinds of reports. One for school, we did analyses of reading and math scores. We looked at student enrollment, because in some schools, enrollment has become an issue. Whether the schools in that complex met adequate yearly progress, just to get an assessment of what's reasonable to expect of a charter school in their own geographic area. We took the assumption that the likelihood is high that the students attending a charter school more than likely would otherwise have attended schools in that complex. It's not always the case, but more or less. You wouldn't have students coming from one side of the island to the other side to attend a charter school in droves. We found that there were four schools that failed to meet NCLB testing standards, and those are listed there: Hakipu'u, Palaukumana, Kamaili, and Kanu'okaʻaina. We have the bar charts there. Particularly in math, overall on reading, the charter schools are not doing too badly, but in math, they are really far behind, and you find these dramatic differences there between the lavender and the yellow bars. Like I said, Hakipu'u, Palaukumana is the next one. There are again big differences. Kamaili, not so much. And Kanu'okaʻaina, not so much, but still below the NCLB requirements. So that was finding one, academic performance. Finding two, we looked at compliance with law and principles of public accountability. At the time, and I was around at that time, as I said, when charter schools first started, there was a major question as to whether teachers in particular were in fact members of, or remained members of the DOE teaching corps, whether they should remain in the bargaining unit, whether they were entitled to the same benefits, whether they could keep their tenure. And it became almost a breaking point discussion for schools like Lanikai, where teachers threatened to leave if they couldn't stay within DOE, couldn't stay with their, couldn't keep their tenure. And so the decision was made early on that these are public employees still in the bargaining units. And when, and even as we had various permutations of the collective bargaining law, I mean, of charter school law, collective bargaining and the state ethics code remained unchanged. So those were major considerations in looking at compliance issues. One of the basic tenets is charter school employees must be assigned to a bargaining unit and the correct bargaining unit. But to give local school boards some flexibility, they are allowed by law to negotiate supplemental agreements as they wish. Charter schools must also use public funds in an ethical manner. These are public officers and employees. According to the state constitution, the highest law of our land, ethical conduct is an expectation and a mandate. And we are all subject to the state ethics code, including the conflict of interest provision. Now, management plays a key leadership role in making sure that these principles are adhered to. So if you look at JO's criteria for public employees, JO says management establishes and maintains an ethical tone, provides guidance, removes temptation for unethical behavior, provides discipline. In the course of any kind of audit, criteria is one of the elements that we look at. So we look for criteria all over the place. So in addition to the Constitution and statutes, we also sometimes turn to GAO for federal standards. When we look more carefully at Myron v. Thompson, we found practices that we deemed possibly fraudulent, but certainly abusive. For example, Thompson Academy improperly increased employee pay? Four employees, two vice principals, a registrar, and a school administrative services assistant, or a SASA, with four employees involved. And some of them were deemed to be part-time employees. They actually doubled or tripled their salaries under what were called temporary employee contracts. Now, it's our understanding that some of these practices go back to 2004, although our audit was of just SY910. Temporary employee contracts are not supposed to be used in this fashion. In addition to the $122,000 under the temporary employee contracts, two of the individuals also received overpayments, totaling then $133,000 on top of their basic salaries. Now, the school reported to us that it intended to correct these erroneous payments. The net result of this was, as you see there, the top three employees are members of HSTA Bargaining Unit 5. And the fourth employee is a member of HGA Bargaining Unit 3. And under the collective bargaining law, the requirement is that you must be in the bargaining unit that's appropriate for the duties that you perform. So if the vice principal is performing primarily administrative duties, that is not a teaching function, so it's inappropriate to remain in bargaining unit 5 and make up the difference in pay by these temporary employment contracts. And that is what happened. And that's how the elementary VP ended up with a salary of $97,000. Had she really been paid as an elementary VP, she should have been paid only $62,000. And the same for the others. In the case of the registrar, who was part-time, but the school is claiming he worked full-time, it's a little peculiar then, again, to use a temporary employment contract. In the case of the SASA, we were told that part of the reason she needed to have an increased pay that was more than what she was making was she was also then to provide services to a newly created foundation that was then created to help the school. And we will see later what these documents look like. In addition, one of the vice principals obtained a $17,000 contract with her company, which is a catering company. So the administrative functions to oversee the facilities, at her request, a payment was to be made to her catering company, of which she was the co-owner. In addition, the school paid her for the entire school year, even though she retired in the middle of the year. So our question was, if the job is to oversee facilities operations for the entire year, how does one perform those responsibilities retiring at the half-year point? The ethics code says that state agencies cannot contract with employees with a controlling interest in a business that exceeds $10,000. This clearly was over that. Now, let me use my laser pointer to see if I can do this correctly. All right, let's see here. Her company was, I don't know if you can see this, it's Dee's Island Choice there, right here. The Island's Choice. So she was to be paid by Thompson Academy, but payment was to be made, the contract was with the Island's Choice. And here it says the employee will oversee all facilities operations, fire maintenance and inspections, his parking and general maintenance issues throughout the year. But this person retired, like I said, in December. Incidentally, it's on page 42 of your hard copy if you want to see that. The next portion of that same contract shows the signature of the employee there. Here. The other problem here is this is the principal's signature. This is the chair of the local school board. And I believe some claims are now being made that because this document was signed off by these individuals, that these individuals who got the contract should be held blameless.
Okay, we're going to take a break here and get ready for the second hour. But again, that is the state auditor, Mrs. Marion Higa, providing a performance audit of Hawaii's public charter school. And we'll talk more and later on if you have questions and would like to comment. And as I say, don't want to stress you out, but even while Christmas is here and we've cut up the chickens and done whatever you do to them and all, the life goes on. And so it'll be good. And you can go to the website at carolcox.com, CARROLLCOX.com, and you can get it there. And if you are really interested, just know it's here, this information, and it's something you can learn. It's not a soundbite. It's the full story. And how did it get this bad? The review panel, which is educated people, a lot of them associated with the University of Hawaii, how does it get so bad? And then there is no outrage. So something is wrong with our system, and we're going to fix it next year, one way or the other, because there's voting time, and we might have a chance. So I'll be back shortly, and we'll get back to you, and take care.
Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto. Hitch up your reindeer, go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Fill every stocking you find, the kids are gonna love you so. Leave a toy for Johnny, leave a doll for Mary, leave something fruity for Donnie, and don't forget about Gary. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Tell him James Brown sent you. Go straight to the ghetto. You know that I know what you will see, 'cause that was once me. Hit it, hit it. You see mothers and soul brothers. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus, oh Lord, go straight to the ghetto. Fill every stocking you find, the kids are gonna love you so. Fill every stocking you find, they know that they need you so. I'm begging you, Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. If anyone wanna know, tell them Hank Ballard told me so. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Never thought I'd realize I'd be singing a song with water in my eyes. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Don't leave nothing for me, I've had my chance, you see. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus, the soul brother needs so. Santa Claus. be greedy once again. The choir will be singing all night. Christmas carol by candlelight. Huge as a star, shine above. This is a Christmas, yes, a Christmas, my dear. A time of the year to be with the one you love.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
And good morning again. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, and just happy anything that you feel. If you feel good today, go out and share it with someone. In the early hour, the first hour, we were listening to the state auditor, Ms. Marion Higa, giving a performance audit of Hawaii public charter school system results to the Education Committee, both Senate and House, chaired by Ms. Jill Takuda. And before I start it again, you know, take notice of the school. The Charter School Review Panel, as I said before closing in the last hour, now these are the people in the know, and they're supposed to be at the helm. So how do we engage in handing public monies to an entity or several entities and require little or no oversight, and then when told that you do have oversight, they argue with the auditor and others to say that the rules don't apply, even while being told the rules apply. And one of the funny things in this you might take notice is that you may not know that the charter schools or the local school boards in this system is exempt from OIP. They are exempt from procurement rules, if that wasn't clear in Mrs. Hegel's statement. So your tax dollars, is handed to a group of people. And as you see now, it's been demonstrated that they are not to be all trusted. Now, in my opinion, this review, this audit, tells everything about this process, and that who in their right mind would have given and designed this system and invited anyone in and hand them taxpayers' dollars to operate these schools with no oversight. And the insult to injury, while they're exempt from procurement rules, they can set their own rules similar to the state rules, but it's state money. And then they have a lame council that oversees them, the charter school review. And there's Carl Takamura and Ms. Ruth Schumi. That board, just like Mr. Abercrombie got rid of the school board, which I still question, the Board of Education, I think immediately they should abolish the entire program, number one, and start by getting rid of Schumi and anyone else, the 12 members that are associated with that committee or that panel or that council, and then get rid of Roger McKeague and all, because how do you give some $75 million of taxpayers' dollars, and then all you can do is when an audit comes out, stand up and say, it's going to be tough fixing it. Well, it should never have been broken because we're educated people. So I'm going to play the rest of this performance audit presentation, and you can call in 524-1080 after that, 524-1080.
There. It says HKM's reading score is 324, higher than the state average and slightly lower than the complex. In this school, La Comana is in the Roosevelt complex. Then the other highlighted yellow is, while HKM is not yet proficient in science and math, the point spread represented in the chart is relatively narrow. Remember, this was representing the entire school's results. We did our own analysis of their test data, and that's shown in the next slide. The lavender bars are Roosevelt Complex Charter School. The La Comana is in yellow. The bold line is the No Child Left Behind standard that all schools are expected to meet for these relevant years. So you can see there in reading, for the whole school, in 09 and 10, the school's not doing too badly. It's close to NCLB or just about at NCLB. However, in the next slide, if you look at the math scores, there's a huge difference between the school's performance and the complex's performance, and of course way below NCLB standards. So this is the kind of misleading information that is presented versus what you see if you did the analysis of the data. What we did was take the standard information, and it's not difficult, well, it's laborious, but it's not hard. But this data is available. It could have been done by the office or the panel. But having this kind of data then allows the panel or the office to challenge broad statements like the ASC presented. All right. Myron B. Thompson gave us this data, and the yellow portions are the omissions. This data was not made available to us at the time we asked. However, and this was within the ASC, however, the omissions were not noticed by the panel when the ASC was presented to the panel. This was the panel's assessment of the evaluation. And the highlighted one there in the second bullet is detailed analysis of assessment data. There was no such detailed analysis of assessment data. So it's an example of omissions that are not caught when the ASCs are presented. Now, the panel's position is it's not getting support from the office to carry out its functions. It doesn't have resources or time to validate and analyze data the way we did. And it also maintains that the law is ambiguous vis-a-vis the office's responsibility to it. We disagree. 302B, 8B, 11 says that the panel appoints the executive director, and if you appoint someone, you can hold them accountable to your appointment. There are other details in the law. The office is responsible for managing the system, and that's laid out there. It can assist with collecting and verifying ASU data. We verified the data ourselves. We went to the schools. We asked for the documents. We analyzed them. We interviewed school staff. The panel's reporting is unclear on whether the schools are meeting the minimum academic requirements. So we did it ourselves, as I said, for all 10 schools. And again, if you turn to your hard copy, you will see these kinds of reports. One per school. We did analyses of reading and math scores. We looked at student enrollment, because in some schools, enrollment has become an issue. Whether the schools in that complex met adequate yearly progress, just to get an assessment of what's reasonable to expect of a charter school in their own geographic area. We took the assumption that the likelihood is high that the students attending a charter school more than likely would otherwise have attended schools in that complex. It's not always the case, but more or less. You wouldn't have students coming from one side of the island to the other side to attend a charter school in droves. We found that there were four schools that failed to meet NCLB testing standards, and those are listed there: Hakipu'u, Lau'ukomana, Hamaili, and Kanu'oka'aina. We have the bar charts there. Particularly in math, overall on reading, the charter schools are not doing too badly, but in math, they are really far behind, and you find these dramatic differences there between the lavender and the yellow bars. Like I said, Hakipu'u, Lau'ukomana is the next one. There are again big differences. Hamaili, not so much. And Kanu'oka'aina, not so much, but still below the NCLB requirements. So that was finding one, academic performance. Finding two, we looked at compliance with law and principles of public accountability. At the time, and I was around at that time, as I said, when charter schools first started, there was a major question as to whether teachers in particular were in fact members of, or remained members of the DOE teaching corps, whether they should remain in the bargaining unit, whether they were entitled to the same benefits, whether they could keep their tenure. And it became almost a breaking point discussion for schools like Lanik High, where teachers threatened to leave if they couldn't stay within DOE, couldn't keep their tenure. And so the decision was made early on that these are public employees still in the bargaining units. And even as we've had various permutations of the collective bargaining law, charter school law, collective bargaining, and the state ethics code remained unchanged. So those were major considerations in looking at compliance issues. One of the basic tenets is charter school employees must be assigned to a bargaining unit and the correct bargaining unit. But to give local school boards some flexibility, they are allowed by law to negotiate supplemental agreements as they wish. Charter schools must also use public funds in an ethical manner. These are public officers and employees. According to the state constitution, the highest law of our land, ethical conduct is an expectation and a mandate. And we are all subject to the state ethics code, including the conflict of interest provision. Now, management plays a key leadership role in making sure that these principles are adhered to. So if you look at GAO's criteria for public employees. GAO says management establishes and maintains an ethical tone, provides guidance, removes temptation for unethical behavior, provides discipline. In the course of any kind of audit, criteria is one of the elements that we look at. So we look for criteria all over the place. So in addition to the Constitution and statutes, we also sometimes turn to GAO for federal standards. When we look more carefully at Myron B. Thompson, we found practices that we deemed possibly fraudulent, but certainly abusive. For example, Thompson Academy improperly increased employee pay. Four employees, two vice principals, a registrar, and a school administrative services assistant, or a SASA, with four employees involved. And some of them were deemed to be part-time employees. They actually doubled or tripled their salaries under what were called temporary employee contracts. Now, it's our understanding that some of these practices go back to 2004, although our audit was of just SY910. Temporary employee contracts are not supposed to be used in this fashion. In addition to the $122,000 under the temporary employee contracts, two of the individuals also received overpayments, totaling then $133,000 on top of their basic salaries. Now, the school reported to us that it intended to correct these erroneous payments. The net result of this was, as you see there, the top three employees are members of HSTA Bargaining Unit 5. And the fourth employee is a member of HGA Bargaining Unit 3. And under the collective bargaining law, the requirement is that you must be in the bargaining unit that's appropriate for the duties that you perform. So if the vice principal is performing primarily administrative duties, that is not a teaching function. So it's inappropriate to remain in bargaining unit 5 and make up the difference in pay by these temporary employment contracts. And that is what happened. And that's how the elementary VP ended up with a salary of $97,000. Had she really been paid as an elementary VP, she should have been paid only $62,000. And the same for the others. In the case of the registrar, who was part-time, but the school is claiming he worked full-time, it's a little peculiar then, again, to use temporary employment contracts. In the case of the SASA, we were told that part of the reason she needed to have an increased pay that was more than what she was making was she was also then to provide services to a newly created foundation that was then created to help the school. And we will see later what these documents look like. In addition, one of the vice principals obtained a $17,000 contract with her company, which is a catering company. So the administrative functions to oversee the facilities, at her request, the payment was to be made to her catering company, of which she was the co-owner. In addition, the school paid her for the entire school year, even though she retired in the middle of the year. So our question was, if the job is to oversee facilities operations for the entire year, how does one perform those responsibilities retiring at the half-year point? The ethics code says that state agencies cannot contract with employees with a controlling interest in a business that exceeds $10,000. And this clearly was over that. Now, let me use my laser pointer, see if I can do this correctly. All right, you see here, her company was, I don't know if you can see this, it's Dee's Island Choice there, right here. the island's foot, sorry. So she was to be paid by Thompson Academy, but payment was to be made, the contract was with the island's foot. And here it says the employee will oversee all facilities operations, fire maintenance and inspections, his parking and general maintenance issues throughout the year. But this person retired, like I said, in December. Incidentally, it's on page 42 of your hard copy if you want to see that. The next portion of that same contract shows the signature of the employee there, here. The other problem here is this is the principal's signature. This is the chair of the local school board. And I believe some claims are now being made that because this document was signed off by these individuals, that these individuals who got the contract were to be, or should be held blameless. That's for someone else to decide, not us. On top of that, a retired VP authorized the purchase order after she had retired, and the purchase order was approved with a rubber stamp signature. Now that is a no-no in any kind of management and operational, by any kind of operational principle. Then the retired VP signed the $17,500 check, again in violation. On the next slide, this individual here is the SASA. The vice principal retired on December 31st of 2009 and is signing this purchase order in July 2010. Again, a questionable transaction. Back up, Jen, one more. I don't know if you can see it. This is very difficult to see. Down in here, now remember I said this is the SASA, and you wondered what she was getting an extra $17,500 for. Down in here, and this is on page 48 of your hard copy. You can probably see it better there. Part of her duties for the $17,500 was to provide management services for the newly created foundation that was attached to Myron D. Thompson Academy. This has gone by various names, both MBTA as well as Ho'olina. Now, this was outside the scope of our audit, but sometime earlier this year, I believe, there were some news articles about the creation of this foundation, to which then the local school board moved $175,000 to support that foundation. My immediate question was, where did this money come from? But like I said, that was outside of our scope. All right, as I said earlier, there's a rubber stamp for the principal's signature here. Then this was the retired VP improperly approving this purchase order after she was already retired. On the next slide, this was the check made out to that SASA, signed by that retired VP again in July, after 6 months after retirement. The other signature here is the part-time registrar who got those improper payments, and at double or triple his regular salary. Because the school is exempt from the procurement code, the LSVs are expected to establish their own policies. And the school does have a procurement policy. That procurement policy was violated because it requires disclosure of related transactions with related parties. So We find here four of the employees are related to the director, and three are employed are related to the vice principal. But if you think it's only Thompson, that's not so. We found other kinds of strange situations. Why Technology Academy made the news last week or the week before with the departure of its head of school. At the time we did the work, we were quite concerned with the situation here. The LSB had contracted with a for-profit national firm called K-12 to deliver its online curriculum. The head of that entity here is an employee of K-12, not of White Technology Academy. And as an employee of the for-profit company, he was not subject to the state ethics code. He was not subject to the authority of the local school board. Nevertheless, he was controlling $3 million of our money because he was doing all of the purchasing. Now, I've recently left or was dismissed, I don't know which it is, from the position. From watching the newspapers, I see no indication that the LSB will do anything other than find someone else, but still continue its arrangement with K-12. I don't know. This may be something the committee may want to take another look at. But to illustrate that other schools have comported with the law, Pomaile Academy has negotiated supplemental agreements with the bargaining units, while other school boards have not. Now, we found, back up to 72, here. At Hakipu'u, we found six employees paid a total of $11,000. Each of them were paid $2,000 that included stipends, which is contrary to the bargaining unit 5 agreement. There's no allowance in that agreement for stipends for supposedly extra work. At West Hawaii Explorations Academy, one teacher was paid extra for meeting highly qualified teacher requirements. 11 were paid for incentives linked to their portfolios. Again, no provision for that. Some schools assign employees to the wrong bargaining unions or didn't assign them at all. So West Hawaii Explorations Academy, co-director, there are two co-directors there. One director belongs to HSTA, teacher, but performs administrative duties and should be in bargaining unit 6. At Hakipu'u, three teachers, leaders are not assigned to any bargaining units at all. When we questioned the co-director at West Hawaii Explorations Academy about the arrangement, he asserted that the school is autonomous, independent from all law, which is incorrect. There's no question that collective bargaining applies to the charter schools. Now, without oversight, we found charter schools spending monies in an unsound manner. And some of the well-publicized ones were student incentives. In the case of the school that spent over $18,000, when we asked about this total, we were told, well, but we budgeted $25,000. It's as though we should give them credit for not having spent the entire amount. When we asked what was the incentive for, what were the six bicycles for, and how did you tie that to what kind of performance? Well, what was this for? It was very unclear. And apparently, as a result of the questioning, the school has now changed its practice and no longer has this category of expenditure. West Hawaii Explorations Academy paid over $5,000 for excursions with public funds. There again, the school's assertion is that, but these were payments that were fronted by the school and repaid. That it's practice. Well, the assertion is that their standard practice is to repay. That doesn't answer the question of whether the students themselves paid. Apparently, that was not the case. For us, our immediate question was, did any of us go to the prom on somebody else's dime? I don't think so. We all paid for our own bids. So here again is the question of what is the perception of what public money is for? And even if you have fundraising accounts, and actually, to tell you the truth, after we got that kind of response, I pulled out the recently completed audit. The panel did ask all of the schools to engage financial statement audits. And so I wanted to see where this money was coming from. And this is outside our school, but I'll tell you what I found. There is a fundraising account at West Hawaii Explorations Academy that in FY10 had a balance of $166,952. And in that year, made a $100,000 donation to a foundation that was recently established. In the notes to this audit report, it also says that 97% of the school's money comes from the general fund. The school's budget is about $1.33 million. So 97% of that is about $1.3 million, or a little bit under $1.3 million. So by and large, the money for this $100,000 had to have come from general funds, unless it magically came from somewhere else, but I don't see that in the business. So it does lead to the question of, is this what the legislature intended for any monies that go to the school? Once they lose their identity by being shifted into foundations, is it no longer public money? And because this says that the foundation is a separate entity, not a component unit of the school. So its operations will be separate. It will not appear in a financial audit of a school. We saw a situation where there was a large amount in a foundation related to a school when we audited Wailai Elementary, which is a conversion school, back in 2005 or 2006. At that time, Wailai had $500,000 in a foundation account. That even BNF didn't know about. So it's something for the legislature to think about, and I would ask you to give that some consideration, although that was outside our scope. But, you know, it's like I always tell my staff, it's like peeling an onion. You ask a question, you keep finding other things to ask about. All right, so, Jen, go to the next slide. All right, so poor fiscal management practices are fairly widespread among the 10 schools that we looked at. For instance, 5 of the 10 had weak procurement controls. 6 of them of the 10 had deficient approvals documented. Half of them had no approved bank reconciliations. Now, bank reconciliations are important. Bank reconciliations allow you to check on whether expenditures are appropriate. And very often, when you don't have enough people doing different functions, you will find opportunities for embezzlement or fraudulent activities. Because if you're the person that collects cash, deposits the cash, accounts for the cash, reconciles the bank statement, no one will know if you fudged any of those numbers and any of that money goes elsewhere. So bank reconciliations are important for schools to do. And 3 of the 10 did not have segregation of duties issues. That's related to the reconciliation issues. Because if you don't have different people performing different functions, the chances are very good that someone could find the cracks in your system and take advantage of them. All right, so overall our conclusion was, unless the panel and the office take active roles in a robust accountability system, student outcomes or performance will remain unproven, and the financial viability of individual schools and the system itself will be unknown. We've had a number of recommendations for the panel and for the office. They're up there: guidelines, standards, methodology for measuring growth. Panel should collect, analyze, and verify data annually and even NACSA is recommending this annual assessment.
Okay, we're back on air here, and thank you. That was Ms. Marion Higa, and Ms. Higa was giving a report to the legislators, the Education Committee for Senate and the House, and it was a performance audit of the Hawaii public charter school system. And I'll let you draw your own conclusions. And next year, which is right around the corner, I'm going to be sharing with you further detail. You heard her mention the HTA. Now, I have substantial amounts of information that I want to bring forward to you. You're seeing some of the sensitized and the flowered comments and what have you in the paper and on TV, but I'm going to bring you some detail and what and allegations that are being made and alleged and lodged against individuals. And at the HTA, now, I've spoken with a person there who is closely affiliated with it, and at this time, I won't be providing her name, but I will be in the next show. And there are serious allegations. Now, so that we don't know, you heard Ms. Higa allude to the fact that the head of schools left, but we don't know. Well, I'm piecing it together as slow as I can, but and we want to be fair, you know, when you make allegations against someone, you don't want to assassinate their character, and it's just wrong to do it. If you don't know what you're doing or know the truth, then don't speak it. But this party, who was once a school board and now contracts with a nonprofit at that school, and also some of her co-workers and a board member of that organization that has a relationship, financial relationship, and employment relationship with HTA, the Hawaii Tourism Authority, Hawaii Technology Academy, I'm sorry, public charter school there in Waipahu. She indicates that she filed a complaint because as a third party because of sexual behavior, inappropriate sexual behavior projected on a female staff member. And we'll go into greater details on that. And she also told me that with this, the what we weren't told in the public, and no one bothered to give us the details, that this gentleman, Mr. Piontek, was removed and placed on administrative leave. While now I still don't have a specific statement that speaks to that, what I do have from the state office of CSRP, the Charter School Review Panel, is that per NEEP, this is what she's saying. Dear Mr. Cox, thank you for your voice message per your request. On December 4th, 2011, CSRP received an email from Hawaii Technology Academy informing CSRP that the email address contact for Mr. Piontek had changed. So that's consistent with the it doesn't explain why, but he was the email address had been the new email address was they had given a new one. So anyway, that's one. Another serious allegation is that the shredding of documents, and I alluded to that last week, with this at this facility, is that there were shredding of documents, and the vice principal accompanied or assisted this gentleman in getting access to this facility while he had been ordered not to return to the facility. Well, guess what? And if the Attorney General and everyone is going to get to the bottom of this, I would say they start first by making it public, and I've requested. I actually got to see a videotape of the security cameras that had taken, and on that camera you see the vice principal after hours coming in a secured pull up to the driveway of the in the front of the school, comes in, unlocks the door, enters, and shortly thereafter, a male accompanying her entered the building wearing a baseball cap and a hooded sweater, and oddly enough, avoiding to look directly into the camera. And because it's motion sensitive, you see them moving upstairs, and the second set of cameras capture them going and unlocking the door. And this party, and looking at the time frame, was actually some approximately 4 hours, it's described, that they were in there. And they then leave the facility with bags of documents or whatever. I don't know what was contained in them, but remember, the information that the allegations that this party is saying is that he had been told not to return, he was on administrative leave, and that she filed a complaint with K-12 people, Mr. James Canance in California, of which I've sent questions now to Canance. So that in itself, without the other details, I hope to bring to you what the papers and the TVs won't bring to you, because these questions should have been asked. I mean, the auditor's report, the question that should have been asked is not Carl Takamura saying it's going to be difficult in fixing it. No, it should have been it's going to be difficult writing these warrants out, warrants for arrest, for theft, for grand jury indictments. But you don't hear that. You hear the last comment out of the legislator's mouth and Carl Takamura was, we don't want to end on a black note. So I don't want to stress you out today. It's Christmas. But just know that I'm following these details, and there's allegations of money being spent, $10,000, and I'm still tracking that. And I can't say while it's true, but I've contacted, there was St. Louis School name came up in this, and I talked to Walter Kurimitsu. While he stated and informed me that St. Louis did not receive a check, the allegations were there was a check to St. Louis Schools for $10,000 or plus on behalf of a fundraiser from the charter school. Now, listen clearly. Can't say, and Walter showed me, and he looked at the records and found, he informed me that the school, there was no check, but there is a booster club that was doing fundraiser. Had, and it consistent with what was the allegations are, is that the one of the malls have a program where a fundraiser, you sell gift cards. And but anyway, this is a lot to sort out, folks. And as a citizen, and when you're writing to the governor's office and you're writing to the education department, who has all of this under control and who has a reason to hide it and slow in their response. But I want you to know I'm not, this is not out of paranoia or looking for something that's not there. Something's there, and you saw that in one situation where Ms. Higa spoke about, that the gentleman was working for a private company, but he was running the school and having $3 million to manage. How did the review panel, Carl Takamura and Ruth Schumann and the others, allow this to happen? Well, their explanation was, we had talked to them about it and told them they couldn't do this, but what we're going to do is we're going to go back and look in our minutes of our meetings and see what was really said and what was really done. No, you should have been on top of that from day one. But instead, you interacted with this man, and then I got an email from Blake Oshiro. He, in fact, confirmed that he had relationships, legal relationships with Mr. Piontek, as I had reported. And we'll go into greater details on that, too. So my assessment, and I keep saying I don't want to stress you out, but I have an obligation, I believe, that if I stir the pot, then I should let you see what's in it. And what's in it is... there's crime here. It's not just a simple moral issue where they fail our children and they have lost their way as lawyers and legal counsels and politicians and people that come to do good. This is criminal. And to allow it and to hand public money off to anyone and then say you don't have to follow the rules that we follow, even though it's public money, you don't have to disclose documents on Public Sunshine Act, but you can take our money. In fact, we love you and we want you to rip the people off so bad, and we don't care because we want our share. By the way, if you need a good lawyer, you can have the Attorney General, and that is what's happened. Every time you speak to anyone at K-12, HTA, for example, the first thing they say is the Attorney General told us. So how do you get free money belonging to the public, free of any conditions and restraints, and yet you get the people's lawyer to protect you? So something's wrong here. And again, with this, an appointed school board, Governor Neil Abercrombie brought it in, and he appointed them. He didn't like what he had because they wouldn't have been suitable to steal from us. See, some of those people that we voted in had some allegiance to the people. But an appointed board member who has big business management and to head that can keep us in the dark. And that's what's happening. And regards, now some of you say, well, maybe Neil doesn't know. You know, I told you Brian Schatz's brother was appointed without any competition for this job, the race to the top. Well, I just got a letter finally, dated July 5th, where the governor writes to Dr. James Butler, United States Department of Education, and informing him that basically he had appointed or approved Stephen Schatz's role. And so when you see the federal government is saying we're giving, putting the state on high risk. So stand back and take a little gander at this for a moment, and I'll let you go. You have in the news the school now, Race to the Top, is threatened with on the high risk designation because they are not delivering. And then you have the charter school system, people stealing money and lying and cheating. And remember, she only did, Ms. Higa only did 10 schools out of 31 schools. And yet you see no outrage. I suggest to you that if you have children, grandchildren in school, or intend to have children here, you better start thinking about some other means, because if you submit them to a public school, you are simply throwing them in a frenzy of sharks. And the frenzy isn't hurrying to educate your child. It's to take the money and leave your child at the curbside. Legislators, educators, and politicians. What I saw, Michelle Kanani was there at this hearing too, and she was busy texting. You know, I know, not that they can't do these things at once, but, you know, they. I just didn't see the rage that you and I should see, or we should be projecting. But anyway, I do appreciate, and all the time you folk have spent with me in the past years, this will be my fourth year now, and thank you. And things are looking good. Numbers are up as far as viewers at the carolcox.com website, and we will continue to grow. We over the million, so I love that. And I just think that while no promises, and you do go out and get other sources of news as well. There's Ian Lin, as I've shared with you before, whom I never really met him or anything, but his sources are good. And a few others, but I politically, and I see some of the civil beat, but I don't know the total detail of what have you. But again, thank all of you for joining, and I do look forward to continue to bring to you. And let's follow this one on the HTA. There's some goodies in there, and we're going to be naming names and giving specifics. So hold on to your seats and eat good today, and think about those less fortunate. Aloha.
Deck the halls with bells of holly, fa la 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 la. 'Tis the season to be jolly, fa la 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 la. Don we now our gay apparel, fa la 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 la. Troll the ancient Yuletide carols, fa la 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 la. See the blazing Yule before us, fa la 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 la. Strike the harp and join the chorus, fa la 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 la. Follow me in merry measure, fa la 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 la. While I tell of Yuletide treasures, fa la 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 la. Fast away the old year passes, fa la 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 la. Hail the new year, lads and
lasses.
Thank you
for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show. Heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show right here at KWAI.